Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at ESider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page. We are already, folks, at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is very much appreciated, as always. We've been talking about this for a while off the air, Brendan, but we did last year the quarterly star reports, and you guys really enjoyed those last year based off our numbers, and we're bringing it back this year just in a different format, though. Instead of the quarterly reports, we're going to do trimester reports every 30 or so games. So from this first report here, Brendan, the Suns are 4-24. They're putting a lot of distance between themselves and everyone else in the Western Conference. They're one of the worst teams in the NBA. In the standings, they are the worst team in the NBA at the moment. So we're going to go through five players and one coach over the next two parts of the show. We're going to do part one today and part two tomorrow. Today, we're going to focus on Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, and Josh Jackson. And then tomorrow, we're going to focus on DeAndre Ayton, TJ Warren, Igor Kokoshkov. So, Brendan, let's just start off with Devin Booker here because he's the star player of the Suns, but he's also been the most out of the lineup so far. So let me throw it your way first off. If we were going to go through our usual trimester reports here on these guys and go into a little bit more detail as far as our expectations and our thoughts so far this season, let's start off with Booker and I'll throw it your way.
Yeah, I think Booker, it's like you said, it's been really tough to grade what kind of player he really has been, because even when he's been in the lineup, obviously the nagging hamstring injury, the wrist injury to start the season, made it back for opening night, but you figure he might have been a little bit hampered. Had a great first couple of games, but then the hamstring stuff cropped up, and I think he's been, for the most, really most of the season, affected by one injury or another, just general aches and pains that I think are coming with his new role. And also just, he got, I think, pretty unlucky with that hamstring to start the season. But that has not really slowed him down, to be completely honest, because he's at a 34.1% usage rate. That's the highest of his career. Taking a lot more responsibility on, playing a switching defense that asks a little bit more out of him than he's really had to do defensively in the past. Getting a little more energy on that end, I would say. Still not quite, you know, where he needs to be, but I think it's tough to kind of separate where that responsibility and usage plays into the injury stuff and where it is, you know, just some unluckiness or potentially, you know, a sign that his body is one that needs to be treated with even more caution than I think he gave it the first few years of his career.
Really quickly, if you guys are curious about the numbers, Booker is averaging 23.5 points, 6.7 assists, 3.6 rebounds, and 1.2 steals, while carrying shooting splits of 43.9, 31.3, and 84.2. His shooting numbers, especially his three-point numbers, kind of indicative of, I think, his injury, Brendan, his hamstring. It was really obvious when you look at his splits as far as catch and shoot and off the dribble, where it's just a 10% difference. It looks like 38% on catch and shoot threes, 27% on off the dribble pull up shots. So I think it really, his shooting ability was really hampered by his injuries in the first trimester of the season.
Yeah, I think that's completely true. We saw that after the first hamstring injury, but before he re-injured it. I remember the Toronto game was one where he said he was not feeling the effects of that pain on his left hamstring. I think he clearly was. You see it when he tried to lift for shots, even layups and things around the rim, but especially on jumpers, just not getting the elevation that, you know, he needs to be efficient and accurate on those shots. And 54.7 true shooting percentage for him so far this year, down from last year by a pretty considerable margin. That's far below, you know, the league's elite scorers, which I think is a class he considers himself in, and he's shown himself to be that in spurts, just not really doing that so far this year. 31% on threes is in the 23rd percentile for combo guards in the league. Just really, really struggling from three. Even, you know, the catch and shoot, I'm not exactly positive on the volume there, but I would imagine he's taken far less of those. I would say probably a fair bit of his shooting has come on pull-up, so he needs to be better on those, even though it is a tougher shot. He's nailed those for years now. And still some of the same warning signs that have cropped up in past years for him, just 59% at the rim. It's the same as last year. just really needs to improve there. And Zach Lowe had it in his 10 things, I think, last week, of some of the nice little scoop shots with both hands Booker's developed this year. And I do think that's a way he's going to be able to get around not always having an athletic advantage over his defender or the guy at the rim. But I think that's another area you notice the injuries. And then free throw rate down almost 6% from last year, just really not getting the line. That's a thing that's impacted this entire team. They're really bad at drawing fouls and creating each. He's supposed to be the leader of the offense. I think he could do a better job of setting that tone and helping the team get into the bonus, things like that.
I feel like this could be an easy yes answer for almost every guy we talk about in the next 2 days here, Brendan, but how much is not having a starting caliber point guard affected a guy like Devin Booker this year?
A lot. And I think that those shooting things that you mentioned, the split between him taking pull-up jumpers and catch and shoot jumpers, that's a really easy area for Booker to improve. We saw early in his career what an impact that had between Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe, setting him up. Even guys like Ronnie Price or whoever you want to point to, point guards that are just more talented, more experienced than anyone on this roster right now, helped him a pretty great deal. That's really what led to his breakout. And then as he's had to take on more responsibility, the injuries have happened, he's gotten a little bit less efficient overall. So I think that's pretty easy to see. And I think the other thing you have to wonder about is, you know, he's really has gotten a lot better on offense, and you want to be able to put him in a position where those skills are most maximized. The Suns have been 4.5 points better per 100 possessions in 158 possessions when Booker's starting at point guard. So he's that lineup is still playing well. It's still succeeding even with the limited help he has. So you think about if you put a point guard in Trevor Ariza's place, move everybody down a position, how much better even then that could get. So I think that the Suns, you know, it's kind of like a silly way to think about it, but I really feel like they owe it to him with the work he's put in to make his load easier, so he's not having to deal with these injuries. And, you know, I mean, that's not to say that they would just go away, but, you know, protect him a little bit so he's not taking such a beating every night, and allow him to be more efficient, allow him to impact the game even more, because I think he's uncomfortable right now. I don't think that's the role that exactly suits him to be a, you know, Chris Paul type of player, and that's sort of what he has to be right now.
Yeah, like you said, there is usage as a career high right now, but also his true shooting percentage is near a career low, even though he did have 53.1 in his sophomore year and with Phoenix, 54.7. That's a 2% drop off from last year. And you hope that once a point guard gets in the lineup, that goes back up to normal for Booker here soon. But I think one more thing I wanted to ask you before we give our grades out on Booker is his defense, because before he got hurt, Brendan, he was really actually trying his butt off on defense, especially the past few games he was playing in. Do you think that Booker's starting to realize that he has to actually start trying, or at least know the ins and outs of pickpocketing passing lanes and all that? Because he's averaging a career high in steals, like I mentioned, at 1.2. His previous career high was 0.9. So what do you think about his defensive efforts so far this season?
I mean, I think that there are definitely games where you notice it. I think there's certain matchups that favor him more. I think the switching that we've seen from this team a little bit more lately will help him. But I think overall, it's still a long way away. I mean, that's just the reality. I think something that the Suns are going to have to face sooner rather than later is just, you know, their best player is not somebody who defense comes naturally to, somebody who doesn't have the physical gifts to make defense easy on himself. It's going to be something that every night he's having to give incredible effort on to make an impact there. You know, you see that with plenty of guys in this league where they're not just ideal long athletic guys that defense is kind of their calling card, and they have to really just make it about effort. And I think that's going to be his path to being effective on that end. And we do see it some nights, but a lot of nights we don't. And, you know, I think that's one thing that when he does come back, if they do have a point guard that can take some of those smaller guys and he can defend people that are the same size as him, I think that's going to help too. But, you know, we'll have to see if that trend continues, if he does start to make more of an impact and help the team's defense statistically, or if it's, you know, going to be another season where it's just below average.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting to follow long term, especially with two guys like Booker and DeAndre who are sub defenders, see how they build long term around those guys and see if they can build a winner. But let's give out grades here on Booker, Brendan. I'll start here, and I think I'm going to factor in for most of these grades, to be honest, at least for the first trimester of the season, that no point guard was on the roster, no starting caliber point guard. Maybe D'Anthony Melton is that answer down the line, but who knows? But I think I'm going to give these guys probably a slight bump in all their grades because I think they could be better without a point guard. So I think Booker gets a B-plus from here because he's still doing as much as he can in a different role. the shooting ability was compromised by his hamstring and his injuries. So I think a B plus is reasonable for Booker.
Yeah, I think I'll go a little lower than you. I do think, you know, there's certain aspects of his game that I was hoping would improve, especially finishing at the rim, that just haven't. And I've been saying it for so long now that I think it really is something that will help his game quite a bit. And it's puzzling to me why it hasn't improved. I understand what the point about, you know, there is a point guard, you kind of have to, isn't a point guard, you kind of have to grade on a curve to a certain degree, but I'll go with a B just because I think overall, you know, above average for sure, had a pretty solid season, but by his standards, I think he's kind of just matched last year's production instead of getting better.
Alrighty, that's a B plus for me and a B for Brennan, if you're keeping track while you're listening here. But before we go any further to our next person on the list, Josh Jackson, I want to tell you guys about our Locked On NBA Twitter page. If you're not already following them, please do so at Locked On NBA Net. It's a valuable resource, in my opinion. You can follow people outside of Phoenix, like me and Brendan. You can follow David Locke in Utah, Adam Mares in Denver. They're almost at every practice, every game, every Locked On NBA host is almost credentialed now. So that's really awesome to see. The network's really growing. So we're really excited about that. So if you want to give a follow to the Locked On NBA Twitter page at Locked On NBA Net, if you want to get more involved with the national NBA scene, please do so, because it's a really valuable resource.
I want to also guys tell you guys about Homey. It's a new sponsor we have on the show here. Told you guys about them yesterday. Really excited to get started with them. And, you know, as you guys know, Evan and I are just starting out our careers and kind of figuring out what's next. And buying a house is something that I'm completely not looking forward to doing, mostly because of how much of a hassle it is with various, you know, fees and just the pain of finding the people that you trust to work with and not feeling like you're getting screwed over and making sure your money's going to the right place, you're getting the right price. And I think Homey is the place where you can go and feel pretty good about all of those things. Now, their main way that they're going to really change the experience for you guys when you check them out is by limiting the fees when you buy or list or sell a house to just $1,299 at close and a $199 listing fee. Those are substantially below what you're going to find anywhere else. On average, Homey customers save over $10,000. When you buy a home with Homey, you can qualify as well for up to $5,000 buyer refund to help with closing costs. They want to make this process cheaper for you guys, and they're there to help you along the way. So they're new to Phoenix, coming from Salt Lake City, another pretty similar market. They know what they're doing here. They know how to help you. They have a team of attorneys and realtors, as well as an easy-to-use interface and mobile app system that's just there to support you every step along the way on both the buying and the selling side. Now, there's a lot of apps that or companies that claim that they're going to help you with a lot of these same things, but at the end of the day, they just want to buy up those houses and make money on the back end. Now, Homey doesn't have any interest in doing that. They help people on both sides of a transaction, and they give discounts on both sides. So they really are just about supporting you, creating that infrastructure to make it easier and cheaper to buy and sell. Their motto is "We've got your back," and that's, I think, a pretty good encapsulation of what they're going to do for you. So what we're going to give you guys when it comes to Homey is $100 off that listing fee of $199. You can list your home or search for homes at homey.com using the promo code LOCKEDON. As always, all one word, the name of this show, to get $100 off that listing fee and to take advantage of all the great stuff Homey already has to offer. All right, so our next guy today is going to be Mikal Bridges, somebody who I think has been pretty impressive, but statistically doesn't really jump out. What have your impressions of him been overall?
Like you said, Mikal is a guy that's not going to really show up in the box score, so to say. He's a guy that's going to really show up in the advanced numbers and really just the on-court product. Like a Rashawn Holmes, like he's an effort guy. He's a really good instinctual guy. Mikal is that and more. He's a good shooter, even though the numbers really aren't showing right now. He's a very good on-ball defender, very instinctual, like I mentioned. And really the thing is, he's really starting to show more of a playmaking ability that I didn't really see at Villanova. And with an Igor's pass-happy offense, that's really starting to surprise me a little bit, and it really could help him down the road with the development. But I think with Mikal, it just – so many ups and downs with him lately, especially with just, I think, him hitting his rookie wall for a week or so, a little bit earlier this month. So I just think it's interesting little up and down peaks and valleys we have with Mikal over the past few weeks. But I think he's starting to get back to where he was earlier in the season when we had that big game against Memphis. So if he can stay in the starting line for the rest of the year, Brent, I think he's going to continue to get better and better.
I think he will. I think he has to stay in that lineup at this point, really making a positive impact on the team. He doesn't necessarily show up in the box score per se, but the Suns have been 8.4 points better per 100 possessions with him on the court, according to Cleaning the Glass. And that impact on defense is especially just glaring. They do a thing on Cleaning the Glass. They give you a percentile of the impact. So Mikhail's impact on the defense is in the 87th percentile. So he's at almost the very top of the league in terms of how much better the defense is from an efficiency perspective when he plays. And that for a rookie is just impressive. I mean, obviously it speaks to the Suns defense overall that he's able to have that big of an impact. You'd hope they'd be a little better, and a rookie learning the league wouldn't necessarily make such an impact, but I think it also does definitely speak to his overall, just the effort he brings, his versatility, also a 2.2 steal percentage, which is in the 86th percentile for wings. Really the only thing you can kind of find a problem with defensively for him is his foul percentage. He fouls on almost 5% of plays when he's on the court. That's a problem for this whole team, especially not getting to the line themselves to make it easier on the offense on the other side to get those shots by fouling. But for Bridges to come in, I mean, obviously he was an older rookie, but I think the impact on just winning and efficiency has been pretty alarming in a good way for Bridges already.
I feel like we're probably in agreement with this answer, but I'm of the opinion that Mikhail Bridges is already a top five son on this roster. TJ Warren, Devin Booker, they're probably the top two, but I think you have a case, especially with Trevor Reeves going to be off this roster soon, that Mikhail Bridges could be the third best player on this roster.
Yeah, and I think he'll continue to get better. I agree that he has shown a little bit more on offense, just kind of a little more bounce, a little more comfort with, you know, handling the ball, making plays on the move. One weird stat that I noticed with him, every single three he's taken has been assisted. It's kind of crazy. Really shows how little he has the ball in his hands outside of, you know, catching and shooting right now. And I think that's something that he can build on, probably do it a little bit more, especially when Ariza's out of the lineup. We talked about that the other night after the Clippers game, just imagining his role being a little bigger when Ariza's not in there, because Ariza does have some playmaking duties at the end of possessions, or, you know, when the ball kind of reverses around the court and he's open to drive and kick. I think Ariza or Bridges will be doing that when Ariza leaves, a little bit more, hopefully. His 3-point rate's over 500, over 50% of his shots are coming from distance. I think that's exactly where it should be. I think he's a really, really confident, comfortable shooter, versatile shooter, can do it on the move, can do it catching and shooting. So I think his role will increase, and I think that's for the better of the team, really.
I think we touched on this in our last recap episode at Tug Stewart Resort Arena, but do you feel like once Ariza leaves that he's going to take that role as far as the guy who can maybe sometimes get 5-6 assists just randomly every night?
Yeah, I think he has that in his game. I think he reads the game pretty well. Smart defensive player, and kind of with the cutting and, you know, just taking advantage of matchups that he's able to do on offense. I think, you know, he is a guy who could already handle a little bit of a bigger role than he's had. And, you know, you do have to remember too, like, he barely started joining the starting lineup right before Booker got injured. So I think, you know, when that lineup hopefully coalesces and gets healthy, and maybe there's a point guard in there to make things even easier, Bridges is somebody who will benefit from all that stuff and, you know, slowly start to earn the trust of those guys around him so that he can take on a bigger load. Because at Villanova, he did a lot more. You know, he got into the post sometimes. Now he's a lot smaller than NBA players right now. I don't think that'll be a part of his game soon, but he definitely has more comfort on offense than just a pure catch and shoot player. And I think, you know, allowing him to explore that stuff will obviously in the long term really help. But I do think he still has room to help this team this year too.
What's really impressive too, I'm just looking at his advanced stats here, even though it's not really that impressive, but his VORP, his value above replacement player for a guy who's on the worst team in the league, to be even 0.0 is impressive with how much minutes they played. And that kind of tells you all you need to know about Mikhail's impact on the court. But let me ask you one more thing about Mikhail, because we touched on this in the pre-draft process with him. And I know Ryan McDonough, the former GM of the Suns, called him a 3-4 when he was drafted. But do you think now, a few months into his career, he's going to be more of a 2-3 than a 3-4?
Yeah, it definitely looks like that. I think you and I were both excited about him potentially playing more of a forward role. I think it's been helpful that TJ Warren has been able to space the floor so well and handle that on defense to a certain degree and not have to put that burden on guys like Josh Jackson or Mikal Bridges. I just don't think either one of them are ready or, you know, don't seem like very close either. So it does seem like for now with his skinnier frame and just kind of doesn't really have that strength advantage over NBA players like he did in college, that he's more of a 2-3 right now. But that it is interesting. I wonder where it'll go from here as his career goes on, if he's a guy who can get to playing that four position, because he has the you know, length and height to do it. It's just a matter of putting muscle on and physically matching some of those heavier matchups. But what do you where do you have Bridges as far as grade goes?
I think for me, I'm going to go with a solid B just because I don't think he's been better than Booker this year. But I also think, like I said about Booker, his grade, I think he's gotten hampered a little bit without a point guard. I think he'd be a lot better with a starting caliber point guard. So for me, it's going to be a solid B from Mikal Bridges. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you might have a different, a little bit of a different way of thinking about it, because I think for, you know, for his role and where he is just as a rookie in his career, I feel like I have him at an A. I think, you know, obviously, you know, I don't necessarily think like I'm giving him a higher grade than Booker means he's been better than Booker. I just think he's exceeded expectations for what he was supposed to be doing, what he was, you know, at least I assumed he'd be capable of in year one. I think the fact that he's already a pretty capable 3-and-D player, I think you'd rather have him than some veterans already. To me, I think, yeah, it's an A for me.
You know, if you made a really good point there. I think you make a really good point about the grading scale. I'm going to change mine really quickly. Sorry, guys. B to a B plus. That's all. I think that makes sense for Mikal. So,
yeah. All right. So I got an A. Evan's got a B plus. Before we move on to our final guy today, which is going to be Josh Jackson, maybe end on a little bit more of a sour note, unfortunately, I want to tell you guys really quickly about the Locked On NBA show. You've been hearing about it for weeks. They continue to put out great work. Sam Amick of The Athletic, Ben Golliver of The Washington Post, the great hosts that you already have heard a lot about, John Corrales, David Locke, Josh Lloyd. Monday through Friday, 30 minutes a day on all the biggest news in the NBA from around the league, not just in Phoenix. Obviously, plenty to talk about from, you know, Giannis, dominance, MVP candidate, all of a sudden to Steph thinking that the moon landing was fake. All the craziness that happens around the league is always going to be there for you on Locked On Suns every single morning. So, or Locked On NBA, go check that out. Alrighty, Josh Jackson. He's a guy where every time I go dive into the stats, it's just like, oh, it's that bad.
Yeah, it is that bad.
Yeah. And I always like roll my eyes when people say, like, I hear a lot of national people, because he's, I think, still holds a little bit of intrigue just because he was a number four pick last year, even though he's had such a unfortunate start to his career. I think people still kind of pay attention, and I've heard a lot of like, he's the worst player in the entire NBA. And I'm always like, come on, like, there's so many worse players than Josh Jackson. And then you look, and at least on offense, there's a legitimate case to be made that he really is the worst offensive player in the league.
Yeah, look at his offensive box plus minus, Brendan, -6.4. Last year was -3.1. It's doubled.
Yeah, it's doubled in the wrong direction. And yeah, 25.7% usage, which is in the 91st percentile for forwards, but just a 0.458 true shooting percentage. It really just 49% at the rim. He's making less than half of his shots right at the rim. 26% from three, a much higher volume than you would ever expect from somebody who doesn't make a lot of those. Turns the ball over on 19% of possessions when he's on the court. That's in the zeroth. It's literally the worst in the entire league for forwards. The only one bright spot is a 17.3% assist rate, but it doesn't really do a lot of good when the defense doesn't have to respect any other aspect of your game that you can pass well. And obviously we've known he can do that since he left Kansas, since he was playing at Kansas. But, you know, the defense is not afraid of a guy who can pass when he's not going to make any shot that he takes.
Yeah, that's the thing. A guy who's posting a negative assist turnover ratio kind of cancels out that positive point there, because he's just been a really bad player overall. I'm looking at his per 100 possessions, Brennan, and if you look at it, he's regressed in almost every single category except assists. He's barely gotten better in steals, barely gotten better in blocks. His turnovers, like I mentioned, have doubled. His defensive rating has stayed the same. His offensive rating has nosedived. Literally everything except just a little bit of playmaking ability within Igor's offense being more utilized. But this guy's the exact same player he was as a rookie.
Yeah, it's very frustrating to see. And I think, you know, you hear him talk and you feel like he's kind of slowly starting to get it. We've seen flashes. It was just terrible, but also you kind of expected it. At least I did. The local media here was pretty excited about that game he had against the Clippers in there. Is this the turning point? People love to talk about turning points. And is this going to be the same going forward? And maybe not acknowledging, like, or he just had a lucky game. And we've seen that plenty of times with Josh Jackson now, where some shots go in that you're not expecting to, and all of a sudden it looks like he's having a great day. And I think that's what happened on Tuesday, because, or on Monday, because Tuesday in San Antonio, he had one of his worst games ever again, 2 of 14, if I remember right, and just really low impact on the game overall, despite starting. So I think that we just need to realize that this is still how it is with Jackson. There really hasn't been that much growth. And despite, you know, he has it all, I'll throw out, he has a 2.2 steal percentage, which is in the 100th percentile for forwards. You know, positionally, he does create plays on defense better than you would expect, but it's just not enough. He needs to be able to be something on offense. It's almost like the Dragan Bender effect to a certain degree, as far as just you can't have such a negative impact on offense no matter what else you can do on the court. You have to be able to make shots. You have to be willing to take good shots. Otherwise, you're just really not playable a lot of nights.
I wanted to ask you this point before we end today's podcast and give our grades for Josh Jackson, because just from a philosophical standpoint, this really intrigued me that we've seen it now with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist in Charlotte, where they took him over Bradley Beal. They could have had Kemba and Bradley Beal together. They could have happened again over Josh Jackson and De'Aaron Fox. It could have been De'Aaron Fox and Devin Booker. But just I bring those two parallels together because those guys were non-shooters. Their jumpers were broken, and they turned out to be not really good players. MKG's kind of revived his career a little bit as a role player, but he's really overpaid for his position. So do you think that philosophically that picking a non-shooter and up that high in the draft is a bad idea?
Yeah, I think you and I probably listened to the same conversation. I mean, Kevin O'Connor was talking about this on his podcast, and I've heard a lot of that talk recently with not just Jackson. I think that, you know, as the league's changing, the draft maybe was a little bit behind in acknowledging some of those changes and how rapidly they were happening. You know, we saw a lot of bigs get taken in the 2017 draft too, that really shouldn't have. Caleb Swanigan, guys like that. Maybe that, you know, was a draft we'll look back on and think like, that's the last draft before these teams realized you just can't take players high really in the first round at all that have such a little chance of being above average shooters, you know, spend so much time developing them when you know, you're kind of tanking those minutes when those guys are on the court. We've seen that with Josh Jackson. It's almost impossible to create like an efficient, well-rounded offense when he's on the court. And that's just, you know, for a team that wanted to win a little more this year, kind of doesn't really work. It really just doesn't make sense for Jackson to be a part of a team that wants to be an efficient offense. And it's unfortunate to say that, because I think he had a lot of upside. He still does. But you look and it's like, a lot of the guys taken after him just make more sense, just flat out seem like players who can envision growing into above average modern players. And unfortunately, Jackson really doesn't look like that.
Now, one last question here before we go to our grades. And it just popped in my head here because it's a really interesting question we're going to have to look back on here in about 10 months when his fourth year option is going to be either accepted or declined. How big is it for the Suns, at least from a negative viewpoint, that if Jackson does bust out, if he isn't on this team at the end of the 2020 season, how bad is that for the Suns rebuild? Do you think they're going to be able to recover from that? Because, I mean, they hyped it up in 2017, Brent. I mean, McDonough even said it's the best fit on paper between a prospect and a team. Everyone thought Josh Jackson would be the second guy next to Devin Booker, but it's been nowhere close to that. So if Jackson's not a part of the future, do you think they might have lucked out there with Mikal Bridges, or how do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I think taking Bridges will hopefully make things a little easier. I think he's a starting caliber player pretty soon going forward for a winning team. But, you know, it's a massive failure when you think about what just happened with Dragan Bender and Marquese Chris. I can't remember ever even hearing about in the past, or, you know, in the time I've been covering the league, like a team that declined it's almost unfathomable to decline the fourth year option on two consecutive top five picks. That's crazy, especially for a team that intentionally lost to get there. Just really, really a failure on the Suns' part to evaluate and develop talent. But yeah, we did end on a sour note. I guess we had some optimistic things to say, and we picked the worst guy to end with here. But what's your grade for Jackson?
You might be more harsher than me. I don't know though, but I'm going with a D.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably where I am too. I don't think I'm quite ready to say an F because there have been games like Monday. You know, for an F, it's like this guy is just terrible. I mean, like Ryan Anderson probably would get an F from me. We're not even going to talk about him, of course, but I think that's how low you have to fall to get an F. So I think a D is like below average, but give him a little bit of credit because he's had games where he popped. But if you're looking at it from a developmental perspective, I think it is an F because he's really gotten worse in his second season. That makes no sense.
Yeah, that's a really good point there. And just to recap, folks, I had my grades for Devin Booker as a B+, Mikal Bridges as a B+, and Josh Jackson as a D. Brendan had Booker as a B, and then Mikal Bridges as an A, I believe, and then Josh Jackson as a D as well. So that'll be it for today's podcast, guys. We're going to be going through – this is part one of a two-part series here with our trimester report cards. So we'll be back to you guys tomorrow for part two featuring DeAndre Ayton, Igor Kokoshkov, and TJ Warren.